You're listening to Creative Thursday, episode number 167. Welcome to Creative Thursday with Marisa Ann Cummings. We're talking all things life, business, and creativity intended to inspire and empower you wherever you are on your creative journey, both personally and professionally. Thank you for listening. Hi, hello, it's Marisa. How are you? I'm going to open this episode with a question. How often do you feel confident going out into the world? Would you say 90% of the time you feel confident, 75% of the time, 50% of the time, 25% of the time? Would you say that you feel confident most of the time in your life? I have had many times where I don't feel confident. And I had a really wonderful message from someone I'm in an accountability group with, and today they were saying, "You're such an accomplished woman," and I thought, thank you. Thank you. And yes, you all know this about me. I tend to want to be at that next stage of my journey that many times I forget to appreciate how far I've come. But it also got me thinking about confidence and, you know, are you feeling, or some of it may also be, are you feeling really secure? Or are you feeling insecure? And when I say go out into the world, I also mean socially, to be specific, or posting on social media, or communicating with your audience through emails. How do you genuinely feel? And what do you think, if you're not feeling as confident as you want to feel, what do you think holds you back from that? So I had an experience I want to share with you, a story to share with you to illustrate a concept that I believe will and does change everything. Okay, I set the bar pretty high. It starts in a ballet studio. So as you know, I also went back to dancing this year. And I think I'm almost at my year mark. I'm almost at my year celebration of returning back to ballet specifically. And I don't know if I've shared this with you, but growing up, I did start dancing when I was about 4 or 5. And I also stopped dancing not too long after that. So maybe I danced from 5 to 7. Then I went back to dancing in high school. Well, maybe I just attended a class, and one of my best friends in high school at the time was headed towards being a professional dancer. And I accidentally went to class with her. Well, she invited me and I went. And all I remember is I went across the floor in this dance class. And if you haven't been to a dance class, typically you all start together, you're facing the mirror, you're doing different combinations, and then to work on specific steps or turns, you will go across the floor diagonally, either by yourself or in groups of 2 to 4 people. And it's a moment where you feel in the spotlight just because everyone else is waiting in a line while you move across the floor. And I realized when I went back to dance this time that I have some kind of PTSD where I really, and I say that with a little bit of a sense of humor, right? This is dance, it's dance class, it's not that serious. But at the same time, these moments in your life can have such a profound and lasting impression. So if you take me all the way back to that moment in high school where I was supposed to go across the floor and I was in a room of dancers who were far more skilled than I was. It's a terrible feeling. You don't know what you're doing. You don't know the steps. You are out of breath. You feel like everyone is watching you and they are, and it's high school and it's high school girls. I don't want to stereotype us, but we're not always the most inclusive. I hope that's changing, my high school girls. I hope it's changing for you, but you can really feel left out in high school, or you can feel really included, but sometimes people get a little bit judgy and a little bit catty, and it doesn't help. It doesn't help to go to a dance class and to feel like you are not good enough. And so you don't also want to step into a class out of nowhere that is way more advanced than you and try to instantly keep up. There is a fine line, I will say, where you want to stretch past your comfort zone, right? We tend to do that, or I tend to encourage this as well. And it does apply to dance. You want the people in the room to be a little bit better than you, a little bit, not a lot. I don't want to go to a professional class unless I know the professionals are opening the class for more beginning level students. That's different as well. You know what I mean. When I think back to that time though, and it comes up every time I go on the diagonal in present day dance classes. So let me go backwards again. I popped into that class in high school. I feel like I must have taken class. I don't know what made me think I should audition for, they were called majorettes. They were dancers for the band. So they would be twirling. I can't even think of what it is. Oh my goodness. Where is my brain today? What are they called? Help me. You know what I mean? They would twirl and a baton. They would twirl a baton. I remember. I haven't thought so specifically about this in a while. My other best friend in high school, my early years in high school, was a majorette and encouraged me to try out. And I knew I was not of cheerleading quality. I was not at all super flexible or gymnastically built, or I also had a moment when I was 10 where I was doing a musical performance and a cartwheel. I was taking gymnastics at the school. And we had a little performance and I did a cartwheel in the performance, and some other girl my age came up to me afterwards and said, "You did your cartwheels into the audience." Again, these moments where that defined me. I was excelling everywhere at age 10. I was playing soccer and doing really well. I was writing and I loved it. It's the first time that I thought that I might want to be a writer. I had a lot of really wonderful friends. I remember that year being really good, but often what sticks out to me is this person telling me that my cartwheels were going into the audience. I think it's possible I have that on home video somewhere. I'll keep you posted. So these signature moments where you're in front of an audience, and even though a class doesn't feel like an audience, it is on some level because you are also training to perform. So you are responsible for developing a skill set, or you want to be taught a skill set of how to perform in front of an audience. And that begins by performing in front of your fellow dancers. And you know, in your mind, you think, oh, this is going to be great. Or maybe you don't think this. I do like to perform and I do like to be in front of an audience. It gives me a lot of energy. I thoroughly enjoy it. And I get, of course, like most of us, I get very nervous. But these moments where I want to do well, I'm ready to have an audience, and something happened that really affected or left an impression on me through that process of performing, especially when it came to a physical performance. And when it happens when you're very young, it sticks with you. It just can leave a lasting impression. And we're coming to understand more about the brain and how the subconscious mind is, and by we, I believe that ultimately this knowledge has been out there for a long time. I'm reading The Power of Your Subconscious Mind off and on, and that book, I believe, was written in the 1960s. But we're starting to talk about it more. At least I'm becoming more aware of it. If you're listening to this now, chances are you are also. We're becoming more aware of how these moments of trauma can affect, and they can be, just to clarify, you know, we define it now as small T or big T, meaning some trauma is truly just very intense. And then there are these little moments that I would call I would believe would be more like a small trauma. Nobody did anything to me. I was just in an uncomfortable place, but it had this very lasting impression. And one of the ways that I've heard recently that when you think about it and you still feel emotion, that it is in you somewhere. There's a little bit of the remnants of that in your body. And this again brings me to present day, where when I get into a class, I feel that. And I am much better of being an observer to this feeling than I am to really buying into it like I used to. So after I tried out for the majorettes, just to finish the arc of my dance career thus far, and did not get in, and also felt again like I wasn't very good, and I felt bad. I felt like my confidence was dinged. I ended up moving into tennis in high school, and I actually found my home there. I did really well with tennis. So if you are raising a girl, or you happen to be a teenage girl coming across this episode, it's okay. You'll find your way. Everybody has special gifts. And you might be saying, well, Marisa, why are you coming back to dance so many times in your life? And it's because I love to dance. And I actually have a little bit of an aptitude for it. And what I've realized looking back is those particular experiences cast a pretty big shadow on what I thought I was capable of. So I kept coming back to it, because it wouldn't let go, and because I almost wanted to prove to myself that I could overcome this and that I could show up in this space confidently. So in my early 20s, I started dancing again. This time I did lyrical jazz. After that high school incident, I put it aside. Oh my goodness, no. I actually took a class in college, and we were even doing choreography. Then I put it aside again, came back to it in my early 20s. Also, on a purely practical note, I think dancing is really fun exercise. I believe that exercise should challenge you. Well, it will challenge you, but it should feel fun. And when you are dancing and exercise, that's your exercise, there's nothing better. Same with yoga for me. I love it. Or horseback riding, or I've loved surfing or snowboarding. Love all of those experiences. So dance, I thought, well, I like dance. I'm going to exercise in this format. I've never been a go to the gym kind of girl. Doesn't really excite me, keep my attention. And dance always does. There's always more to learn. Same with yoga. So I went back. Then I moved to Colorado, so I left that class, and I jumped into another class in my mid-20s taught by a Denver Broncos cheerleader, and I instantly felt intimidated. But as you may know, if you are a regular listener, I will challenge myself. I am good at that. So I will feel uncomfortable. I'll feel intimidated. I may not be feeling 100% confident, not maybe even the 25% range in this case. And I jumped into this class. It was meant to be more of a beginning class. And the dancers were so good. They were also part of a competition team. And this was a really interesting moment for me. I left that class too, which I can't remember exactly why. But two things happened. One is I found yoga. I've been practicing yoga ever since. I'm so thankful for that. My body is so thankful for that. And two, I remember the Denver Broncos cheerleader, who was a fantastic dancer. I remember her asking if I was going to try out for the competition team. And I remember thinking, what part of her thinks that I can do that? And looking back with what I'm going to share with you in this episode, I wonder what part of me didn't think I could do that. So fast forward, right before I turned 40, I went back to dance again. So I left from 26 or 20, I left for 10 years. And I just thought, if I don't do it now, I'm not going to do it. So I did. And I was taking three classes a week, ballet, lyrical jazz, and pop, and some hip hop classes, which I love, by the way. Love those classes. Oh my goodness. And talk about, I would ease my way in because I would feel very intimidated. And it was just super fun. Super fun. And the truth is, when you know ballet, it is a fantastic foundation for all dance. To me, it is the foundation, even hip hop. And certainly there are a lot of people who have an amazing aptitude towards this kind of dance and can just, they just move their bodies. So I can learn and lean into it, but I'm definitely a learner. I didn't automatically come out of the gates with super flexibility or, yeah, super flexibility. I do have a rhythm. Sometimes my rhythm is off too, but mostly I love to dance. Okay. I left dancing then, so this is here in LA. I left when I got my studio space because something had to give. There was just, I was juggling too many things. And I stayed with yoga, but I left the dance studio. And then once time starts to pass, you feel like, oh no, I've forgotten everything. I don't want to go back. So when I went back this time, I did my research on studios because if we're going to talk about competition, you want to be really aware of where you dance within Los Angeles because you are with professionals and they are competitive professionals. And many times, I think this is also part of the quote unquote trauma I'm referring to. Many times the dancers are not inclusive, even adult dancers. And so it was really important for me to find a studio that was welcoming and didn't have a lot of attitude about their dancing. And I've mentioned this before when it comes to business, but it's a very top-down philosophy. So whoever owns the studio, their attitude about dance is going to influence the teachers they hire. It's going to influence the entire vibe. And I just want to give a quick shout out to the Align Ballet Studio in LA that I believe Michael started it 6 or 7 years ago, specifically to support adult dancers, many of whom, yes, did dance all the way through childhood. Some were even on the professional track. There are some really beautiful dancers that attend the studio, which he has multiple locations throughout LA with really wonderful teachers. Every teacher is great. Every teacher I've learned from, I typically will learn with Michael. And, you know, I did my research and I asked about it and before I ever decided to join it because it just always feels intimidating. And I decided to start from the very beginning so that I could take my time with foundation, with foundations to ballet again. And also, what I love about ballet in particular is you you can always go back to your foundations. In fact, this is somewhat related to being an artist in business, and that you're always revisiting certain parts of being a business owner. It's more of a circular path than it is a linear path. So you may be building your website if you're just beginning, but you're going to revisit building your website again years into it or months into it. You will continually improve upon those foundations. And that is the same for dance. So I loved taking time and getting those foundations. So right about now, you might be saying, okay, Marisa, what does this have to do with, is my confidence waiting on me? All right, stay with me. I am about to get there. So fast forward to now and going to this really lovely studio where all the dancers are very friendly. The teachers are very friendly. It's just such a nice vibe, such a nice vibe, and a very diverse and interesting group of mostly women who attend classes. And you do realize that if you're an adult and you're dancing and you're doing ballet, you're definitely a unique individual, because it can feel, and maybe you've gone through this. I would love to know if you reach out to me on Instagram. You know, dance just can feel intimidating. It has that stereotype, and the stereotype is correct in certain instances. But as we are evolving many approaches or impressions or stereotypes around life, as we evolve the ones from the past, maybe dance will become a part of that as well, where it's way more welcoming, way more inclusive versus exclusive, because you really can train. You really can learn, and you practice and you become better, and you don't have to become a professional to enjoy it. It is a beautiful form of exercise and meditation, because with ballet in particular, the focus is, it's profound. If you're really focusing and paying attention to all the detail, it's so good. It really calms my mind. I will also just go on record and say that certain types of yoga and ballet definitely attract people like me, I'll speak for myself, who like to be in control. So it has that element of specificity and control that seems to work and counterbalance my mind. So I like it. I like it. I'm not going to defend it, but it also attracts that kind of a person, because you just have to be very specific and conscientious when you're practicing this kind of dance and the yoga that I do. And the benefit of that is that your mind calms down, because the focus is so intense, and can be intense in a good way, so dialed in. So I have been going to this studio for the past year. I shared with you in a previous episode, I shared with you what it took for me to perform pretty soon into returning. And not only that, but to perform contemporary. And performing is a whole other level than being in a class, even going diagonal across the room. Now you're really in front of an audience. And I still haven't watched the video back. I haven't done it, but I will. I will. And I intend to perform again this year, but I would love to also perform with ballet, which I've never done before. I take that back, except when I was 5 and 7, I was in the Nutcracker. When I was 5 and I was 6 or 7, I was in the Wizard of Oz. I was a munchkin in this performance. I can barely remember those moments, except I'll tell you. And when I bring the blog back, maybe I will, just with this episode, I have a photo of me going the opposite direction of everyone on stage as the 4-year-old Nutcracker. So yeah, I have proof. I have proof I was a performer, and I have proof that I've sort of marched to the beat of my own drum many times. So I'm in class, and one of the approaches to Michael's teaching that I really enjoy is that he'll give analogies and examples. I think that makes for a wonderful teacher when you can highlight certain specifics and and point out how it's applicable to every day. How is ballet applicable to every day? And I love bringing ballet into this podcast in particular, and sometimes bringing in these kinds of physical activities and relate them to my business, because it's really interesting to discover these parallels. So ballet dancers are taught to perform a large, to present a large part of ballet is how you present yourself. When I talk about the detail and the focus, and I'm sure you can imagine if you've watched any professional ballet, the way you hold your fingers, the way that you hold your arms, the posture that you carry, the way that you slightly tilt your head in certain directions, the way that you turn out your foot, the way that you just walk, every single detail has a poise and a presentation. And you start learning that from the very beginning. And then, of course, as you become more familiar with the steps, that should only be getting better, because now you can focus on it more. In the very, very beginning, you're really just trying to understand a combination, what your body's supposed to do, because your body doesn't flow this way naturally. What's fascinating to me with ballet in particular is why doesn't it? Meaning, when you look at a ballerina, when I talk about a ballerina, I instantly am sitting taller right now. When I think about how I would explain a ballerina to you, my hands move a different way. Everything flows in a very gentle, elegant way. There is so much confidence to the presentation of a good dancer. And guaranteed, there's a lot of that confidence that's not actually there. They are able to present it. This is where the performance piece comes in. They are presenting the confidence, because just like in every industry, there's a lot of insecurity. And when you're competing, you know, I don't want to go into it because I'm not that aware of everything, but certainly dance has some horror stories about people competing to such a degree to get their body weight down and just working intensely to be professional. So you can imagine the kind of insecurity that can breed. And yet this dancer has to show up as if they have all the confidence in the world. So what clicked for me and clicked for me recently and related back to Michael's teaching is he's talked about, you're here to present. So present yourself. It's really not that difficult. But yet when your mind is telling you, I suck at dance. I can't get this combination. My toe isn't pointing the right way. I can't move this way. I'm not flexible enough. Whatever that dialogue is, and you know what I'm going to say here, insert the dialogue for what you might be saying about your art. When you're doing that, it's a lot harder to present with confidence because your brain just isn't there. It's not cooperating. Also, you're very distracted with all of those thoughts that are taking you down versus building you up. But all it takes is the most gentle, let's just say all it takes is good posture. Good posture instantly gives a sense of confidence, brings a sense of confidence to someone, and brings a sense of confidence to someone in the room. Have you ever seen dancers walk into a room? It's fantastic. It's just, they just hold themselves away because their body is just knows what to do. But you learn this. So I started thinking about it, and I'm wanting to advance myself within this community, and I started thinking about how mentally I've been holding myself back, and how, as I described to you all these years of dancing, I know what I'm doing. What part of me isn't saying I know what I'm doing? When I step into that room, I'm playing down. I'm staying in the back. I'm not remembering what it was like to embrace becoming a stronger dancer, which I have been before. So there's a whole inner dialogue that I realized was holding me back. And to be fair, and I know you above all will understand this, I have been stepping out of my comfort zone so much with the business that I haven't even had time to think about how I could excel within dance. I was just happy to be getting myself there, showing up, doing the bar exercises, not freaking out when I go across the floor. Those were steps enough for me, which tells me, if I'm recording this for you now, that the business is getting to a certain level where I'm getting more confidence with the stepping out of my comfort zone in the way I felt last year isn't the same this year. I have way more confidence with that, which is a wonderful feeling. And it means that suddenly I was able to shift my focus to, well, now I want to bring more of that to my dance. I want to bring it to every area of my life because I realize that I have been talking myself out of my own confidence. So I would say I probably go out into the world sometimes. Gosh, I know that's a tough question to answer at the beginning, but maybe, you know, 75%. I leave a pretty big gap. I've never even put a percentage on it, so I may have the right to change my mind. But what I'm saying is there's a gap where I don't let myself show up and really own the rest of it. Because if it is owning it, then why don't I? I've done enough in my life. It should be fine. I don't think what's going to happen? Someone's going to point their finger at me and claim hypocrisy. Even if they do, who cares? It just doesn't matter anymore. It doesn't matter. When am I going to grant myself that feeling of confidence? And what was interesting for me was going to dance class this past week, remembering that I know what I'm doing and watching how that transformed in how I danced, how it transformed the way I danced that day. I just thought, I got this. Do you know when you may or may not know, but when you're at the bar or you're in the middle of the room and you're balancing on your toe and you have a leg up, you are in passe where you are. You may be on a toe, you may be flat foot, but your one leg is holding the balance and the other leg is like the shape of the number four. The other leg is bent and your toe is pointing just below your kneecap. And many times then you turn that into a turn. And typically it is leading into a turn or you're holding it. Yes, it can be any number of sequences. It requires a lot of strength and a lot of balance to hold it for any length of time or to even let go of the bar in the beginning. And I'm telling you, when I focus very inward, really not on anybody else, you know, just above someone's head if they are in front of me, or just this past week I can find a spot on the wall because no one was directly in front of me, and I go inward. Do you know what that feeling of balance is like? And I say to myself, I've got this. It works. Which tells me, meaning that I hold the balance longer. When I start to wobble and I think, oh, I don't have this, I totally fall out of it. I know it's such a simple concept, but I started to think about, where am I not doing this in my day-to-day life? I feel like I should know better. I should know what an effect that has, especially if I'm talking about your subconscious, your conscious mind. You know, we sometimes roll our eyes at affirmations, and it's more than an affirmation. You definitely have to feel it. You can't just say it. You have to buy into what you're saying on some level. But I experienced this transformation in the way I showed up as a dancer because I reminded myself that I knew what I was doing, that I could do this. And in those moments of balancing in particular, I would consciously think, I've got this. And what I am sharing with you in this episode is your confidence is waiting on you to be it. what happens regardless of your circumstances, by the way. That's the catch. I'm not a professional dancer. I do fall out of balances. I'm still learning. Of course, I think all dancers, all artists will always be learning, all business owners. But I imagined myself as a confident dancer. Who would that be? What does she look like? How does she behave? And I have also been learning from mentors who suggest, are you running your business as a person with a $9 million company? Or are you still playing small? Wherever you want to reach, then go ahead. Let's say it's seven figures. I recently claimed that vision, right? Are you one of my 1,000 women that we are going to seven figures? Then who is that person and in what time span, right? Let's say this is a year time span. Who is a seven-figure business owner? Well, she is confident. I have been with the people who make seven figures or more in a calendar year, and they do have a level of confidence. They still have insecurities. They still have doubt because they're stretching all the time, but they know how to perform. I don't mean, do not misunderstand this as they're faking it till they're making it. I think the reason that I don't really like that saying is because it's implying that you can just slap on a saying and it's going to work. And it isn't. You have to know you want to go there and you have to buy into it. Otherwise, it will feel fake to you. But you don't have to be the seven-figure business owner or the artist who sold out all of her work at an opening. You don't have to be that person yet to have that level of confidence now. You can imagine who that person will be and start living as her now. And for some reason, I've heard this many times throughout the years, like I've heard it from mentors, and many times too, mentors, I do this as a coach as well, we encourage people to keep going. Don't wait on perfection. Keep moving forward because otherwise you'll be waiting a long time. So don't allow perfection to keep you from moving forward because you are going to stumble. You're going to fall out of that passé. You're going to fall out of a balance, but you're going to gain actual confidence the more that you show up and practice and keep moving forward. And then what I'm suggesting within this episode is that you go ahead and adopt the mentality of the person you most want to become, and you continually do that. Don't wait to be the person. Adopt the mentality now because you probably know who that person is and you can imagine being that person. And the interesting thing is you could be like me, someone whose work has sold multiple seven figures, who doesn't seem to remember that sometimes and still allows that 25% gap of no confidence or less confidence, not no confidence, but less. And why is that though? That's because there's always somebody who's doing something more better than you. So you'll always find this gap of where you think your accomplishments are. That's where that comparison gets so damaging because you'll never catch up. You're really catching up with you, and you really want to acknowledge and embrace what you've done. It's a state of mind. So your confidence is waiting on you to adopt a state of mind. And what I am coming to learn more is that when you adopt that state of mind, you become it. You don't wait for it to happen to you. You become it. So when you put your art into the world, are you putting it out with a confidence as if it's already sold? Or are you putting it out and sharing it with a hesitation of, I hope you'll like me. I don't know if it's good enough. Just think about it and, you know, be honest with yourself. I'm telling you, I've had these moments where I think I often felt it for, well, I felt it for a very long time as a self-taught artist versus professionally trained or feeling like I had a degree. I always felt less than in comparison. And we know that's not true. That does not determine your success or how much work you can sell, your notoriety, none of it. It's all the beauty and the sometimes frustration about the art world is there is no one path or one style or anything. It's really your job to figure this out. What I'm suggesting to you, though, is don't wait on confidence coming to you, because you have to adopt it no matter where you are on the journey. We've all heard stories about people who, there are people who, for all intents and purposes, they have the appearances of just being phenomenally successful, and then people who know them, or they will talk about it later, how utterly insecure and they weren't feeling any confidence. And it's hard to believe. They're either very good performers or they're not being totally forthcoming, because I do believe you've got to have enough confidence to get there. You do. So we could also be splitting hairs over insecurities and versus confidence, like, you know, defining that more specifically. But what I know to be true is that accomplishments do not give you the confidence, and they will for a moment, and then something else will happen and you'll revert back to whatever that percentage is for you. You'll go back to that. It won't be lasting. What's lasting is when you find that inner confidence, that, let's bring back the ballerina, that inner poise, and you find that regardless of whether you're a beginning dancer, you're a beginning artist, a beginning business owner, that you find it, because it's already there. It's waiting for you. It's waiting for you to say, you can be here now. And I know things happen. I just shared with you things that happened to me as a kid, these memories where I felt less than, I felt judged. I was judged. I was told to my face, or I was snickered at behind my back, or I put a lot of judgment on myself that maybe nobody else was doing. But I had these moments where I felt so not good enough when it came to this physical expression of dance, that I held myself back and I would not go to classes. So like I said, I tend to be a person that when I observe that, I kind of go right in and say, okay, we're going to do this, which is also probably how I ended up becoming a professional artist, because of the same thing. I thought, well, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it. And I've got to hit this head on and see if I can do it. Sometimes I just like to challenge myself. And it turned into a business, and that's a great thing. And maybe one day, no, I don't really have a desire to be a professional dancer, but you will see me perform. You will. I will perform. And I have these aspirations of having a song career as well. So you never know. Stay tuned. You don't know where this ship is going, where the ship is sailing, but it will always be somewhere fun. And now I will continually imagine my inner ballerina and take her with me wherever I go, including this podcast, all my teaching, my coaching, and my painting, and sharing it with you. So I hope that this episode brings a different flavor to this concept of confidence and how you find it and how you become it. And I hope that it inspires you to go out into the world with 100%, just go for it, 100% confidence. So I loved, after last week, I was in my DMs and I saw these fireballs. I thought, what? Wait. And then I remembered that I told you to send me a fire emoji from last week's episode. If you haven't yet listened to it, number 166, about how wanting to sell your art, and you start here at episode number 166. I won't tell you so that you can go and listen. If you've heard it, then you know about the fire emoji. You're still welcome to send me one this week. I ask you this week to send me 100 emoji. Tell me you are on board with our confidence movement. 100%. 100%. Don't have to have it figured all out. You won't have it all. Did I just say figured all out? Oh my goodness. You won't have it all figured out. I'm just going to leave. I'm going to leave my quirks, my speech quirks in this episode. You don't have to have it all figured out. You never will. So just have the confidence now. I give you permission. I wave my magic wand and I give you instant confidence. Boom. Have a beautiful week, everyone. A beautiful creative week. Thank you for listening. And I look forward to the 100 emojis in my DM inbox. Until next time. Creative Thursday is recorded and produced by me, Marisa. You can find all things Creative Thursday at creativethursday.com and creativethursdaycourses.com. Be sure to grab the Successful Artist Plan for 2020 at creativethursdaycourses.com/successful, all lowercase, hyphen, artist. I step you through a mini course, and there are some worksheets to get you thinking along the same lines of what I've shared in this episode in particular. So I invite you to grab that plan. It's perfect for any time of the year. And yes, I wish you a very happy Valentine's Day if you've made it all the way to the end. And again, thank you so much for listening.